Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hi, and welcome to the inaugural edition of the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week as my very first guest is my good friend, Jason Harris, stand-up comedian and filmmaker, member of the Frat Boys of comedy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. I think you hate everything but me. You don't hate me, do you?
I don't hate you. No, no. In fact, that's in the theme song. It's Josh Bell hates everything except me.
Oh.
In fact. So there you go.
Apparently, I hate listening to your theme song because I didn't know
well,
that.
Well, I couldn't possibly blame you. So let's talk about the movies opening this week.
All right. I like movies.
All right. Well, that's good. That's a good start.
All right.
Starting with Pineapple Express. Starring Seth Rogen and James Franco of the Judd Apatow School for Acting or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I mean, I was a huge fan of Freaks and Geeks, like, back when it was airing, before everyone was like...
You didn't like it after it stopped airing?
No, I still liked it, but then it became, like, trendy Uber pick, you know, like, oh, look at this show that we all miss. But I actually remember watching it in college when it was like one week was on like a Monday night, then the next week was on a Friday night and it had no chance to succeed. And, you know, they were both great on the show. And, I you know, all those actors from both Freaks and Geeks and Undeclared, I like to see them do well. The other Judd Apatow show that never went very far.
Right.
But I kind of was disappointed with this movie. I like the Judd Apatow movies, but this one did not do it for
me. It didn't do it for you at all? Because I felt like... It wasn't up to the standards of maybe, like, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which is the most recent, I think probably the most recent Judd Apatow production, which I liked a lot. I know we both liked a lot.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, it was very funny. And I agree it wasn't as good as that. I felt like it kind of got lost in the whole idea of having an action plot, which didn't really add up to much. Seth Rogen and James Franco play a pair of stoners who get caught up in this sort of crime syndicate deal with Seth Rogen's character witnesses a murder and they kind of have to go on the run, and it's structured like an action comedy, like they're trying to do, I don't know, Lethal Weapon or something like that with stoners. And but I thought you didn't think it was funny.
No, there were definitely funny parts of it, but I guess, you know, if you're talking about like from a structural standpoint, there really wasn't much structure. I think there could have been a lot more created, and I don't know, you know, I mean, there were definitely some funny things, but it wasn't as funny as the other Apatow production movies. And I think, you know, you give it more leeway. The funnier it is, the less you need as far as...
you don't care about the structure so much.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are good. They're both fun. You know, everyone's fun. I really like Craig Robinson. It was nice to see him get a nice role as like a henchman with a soft side and whatnot.
Right.
You know?
He was, although he was sort of underused because he probably could have been funnier, and he is a funny guy.
Yeah, he's a great comedian, and he's good on The Office. You know, he's good in he was in 40-Year-Old Virgin. He was fun in that in a brief cameo role. But this one, I kind of wish that they would have even taken it further if they were going for that kind of, like, it's almost like a throwback feel to
you know, the 80s or something.
Right. Yeah. So I would have liked it to if they had gone all out like cheesy, you know, Cheech and Chong meets 80s, like, action, like, you know, Action Jackson, something like that. Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers, maybe he could have played the Craig Robinson part. Would that would have been better?
Well, I like, no.
That's a father-son thing going on for them.
That would have been nice. Yeah. I think a spin-off sequel is definitely what it's called for. Although, if you see the movie.
Well, we don't want to spoil the intricacies of the plot, which is really.
Right. Yeah. But it was kind of a little too far down the middle of, like, here's action, here's comedy, and we're all high all the time. You know what I mean? It kind of got lost in its own path.
No, I agree. I mean, I guess I thought that enough of it was funny, and I like Seth Rogen, even though Seth Rogen at this point is totally playing the same part every movie he's in, which is, I guess, probably about all that he can do. But I like him, and I like James Franco was very funny, I thought. And, you know, he hasn't been known for being funny really since Freaks and Geeks, I don't think. But he does a very good job as the drug dealer who is sort of desperate for a friend. And the sentimentality didn't work either, I don't think, you know, where Seth Rogen and Franco, they have to kind of come to this, you know, resolution where they realize that they actually need each other and they want to be best friends and stuff. But I guess I liked them enough as characters that I was willing to sort of give them the benefit of the doubt, at least until it got lost in the whole, like, let's have a gigantic shootout kind of thing.
Well, I would think, yeah, you know, a lot of the Rogan and Evan Goldberg written films, you know, I mean, obviously they're great friends. And right. I think that's what shines through is the relationship between Rogan's character and whoever's playing Evan Goldberg in this movie.
Right, right, exactly right. Which is, and like in Superbad, which is the other major film that they wrote, and of course the great classic Drillbit Taylor, which I know you didn't see, but is basically like Superbad with 12-year-olds and Owen Wilson, and is not good.
But I like, you know, I like you know, friendship, you know, movies, action, sure. buddy comedies, sure, if you will. Sure. And, you know, the other thing that didn't work for me in this was the where they've also like done really well in the past was the love story, the love interest.
Oh yeah, she was totally dropped. Yeah, at the end, the high school girl, which is kind of amusing. The scene where he goes to her high school and what's his name, Joe Trulio from the state is there as the principal.
Yeah,
and but no, I agree. I did kind of wonder there towards the end, like what happened to her.
There was like a heavy focus on that in the beginning, and then there was a heavy focus on Gary Cole and Rosie Perez, who were the quote-unquote bad guys in this movie.
Right.
You know,
they did get one little moment in the heat of battle where they kind of, you know, clinched together. Gary Cole and Rosie Perez did.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously they've both proven in the past that they're very talented comedically.
Sure,
and I feel like, you know, a lot of those minor players, which, you know, if you look at Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where you get like the Paul Rudd character.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like Russell Brand is very, very funny in that movie.
Right. Yeah. So,
yeah, no, it doesn't work as well. But again, I mean, and I'm agreeing with all of your negative statements. But at the same time, I felt like, you know, I think with stoner movies, like something like Harold and Kumar, even where you're like, I don't even know what the plot is doing here. But if you like the characters well enough, you can kind of go along with it. And I liked it well enough to go along with for the most part.
I didn't hate the movie. It was fun. It was fun enough. But you bring up like Harold and Kumar. Harold and Kumar was funny. Like it was funny.
It was funnier. At least the first Harold and Kumar.
Yeah, Half Baked. Another one. Just really funny stuff. And it's like, you know, you can get, you know, something like an early Adam Sandler movie, which I think, you know, you hate.
Well, I'm not a fan of Sandler early or late.
Right. But I think his early stuff where it's like just one basic thread, I need to go back and do all my school years again, right? You know, if it's funny, it's funny.
Right. Well, that's true. And this is definitely less funny. So I don't actually know if we were going to do this on the podcast or not, but usually I give a rating out of 5 stars. So,
okay.
I'm going to give this movie 3 stars. I think it's just good enough to recommend if you like the style of humor. I don't know if you have a star rating you'd like to give.
Yes. Actually, I will give out of 10 pineapples, I think. So I will give it 6.5 pineapples, you know.
Yeah.
And here's an interesting fact about pineapples that a lot of people don't know.
Did you prepare this before we started?
I really
recording?
Didn't, as it just came up.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, here's something interesting about pineapples for all of you podcast listeners.
Yeah.
Most people just leave a pineapple, you know, sitting from the bottom up, you know. And if you do that, all of the juices will go to the bottom. So you might want to rest your pineapple upside down for a day just
then,
to even out the juices.
Don't the juices go the other direction?
Well, yeah, but I think what you're saying is, you know, if the juices are going in one direction for 2 weeks, it's
going to turn it around. What if you put it on its side?
This would really have been a good plot for a film called The Pineapple Express. Right?
This sounds like a conversation that the characters might have in the movie.
I just found this out from someone who was a gourmet chef not too long ago. And the thing that I found difficult with that is, like, how do you hang a pineapple upside down? Like, because you can't just rest it on its, you know, stem or anything.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point. Well, why don't you just eat the pineapple and then you don't have to worry about how you're storing it?
If we had some pineapple here, I would, you know, go for a nice tropical fruit salad right now, but we don't. So.
No, that is a very sad thing. Perhaps on the next. Let's move on to a very different kind of movie that's opening exclusively over at the Village Square on Friday, and that's Encounters at the End of the World, the latest documentary from the German crazy man Werner Herzog, in which he travels to Antarctica and meets the fellow crazy people who study whatnot over there in Antarctica, and is full of a lot of beautiful photography. I think this movie, like it, he conveys the sense of wonder at like the amazing things that you can find in Antarctica, the animals, the sea creatures, just the sheer expanse of the ice. And is also filled with his ridiculous voiceover, which is, of course, what if you've seen movies like Grizzly Man, where he just has this very, you know, harsh, Teutonic, you know, way of speaking, where he's silently, or not really silently, judging everyone that he's filming. And I thought this movie was fun in a way that makes it sound sort of harsh, but it's actually strangely lighthearted. And I know you're a huge Herzog fan as well.
I actually started my Werner Herzog, you know, fandom back when I was in college. I saw this film called Burden of Dreams, which is a documentary about his making of Fitzcarraldo, which, you know, there's the legend of, like, Apocalypse Now is one of the most difficult movies ever made, you know, where they run into, like, monsoons and typhoons and, you know, actors are getting sick, actors aren't showing up. It was the same thing with Fitzcarraldo, where they had, like, Jason Robards and Mick Jagger as the stars. They shoot 60% of the movie. Jason Robards goes and gets malaria, right? So they reshoot it. With
they,
like,
always do that, those actors, don't they? They go and get malaria.
Yeah, it's kind cool. of a, you yeah. know, it's a power play, right? So, but, you know, so then they have to reshoot. So he gets Klaus Kinski, who was so crazy that he made Werner Herzog look completely sane, like math teacher
that's,
sane.
That's tough. That's yeah. not an easy feat.
So, and you know, the whole movie, Fitzcarraldo was basically about them putting an opera house in the middle of an Amazon, in the Amazon.
You know, which you do sometimes.
People, you know, after you've hung your pineapple upside down, you right. say, what do I do next? Let's go build an opera house in the middle of the Amazon.
If there's anyone who would do that, you know, it's Werner Herzog.
Yeah, so, you know, but it was all like, you know, let's not do sets. Let's actually go and move a boat up a mountain in the Amazon. And it was just crazy, like, what this man would do for the sake of his art. And I was just like, you know, I felt like this man is so dedicated. He's definitely eccentric. And I like his films. I like his personality. I like his crazy voiceovers where it's like he has a far more extensive vocabulary than I do, and he's not a native speaker.
Exactly.
You know, but it's just like – and then one of the things I really liked about this movie is what is he going to do next, you know?
Right. I was reading some review online, and I can't remember where it was anymore, but they talk about this, and they say the same kind of thing, like, where can he go? And they say, what needs to happen is they need to send Werner Herzog to the moon.
That's what, yeah, or, you know, he'll be the first space colony or something like
right,
that,
right.
you know?
And he would do it. If they want to put him in a spaceship, I guarantee you he would be in the spaceship tomorrow.
Well, you have to admire, you know, a man who, I guess you would say, he's not just a filmmaker and an artist, but he really is an adventurer, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
He'll pretty much do anything.
Yeah, and that's what this movie is about, I think, is that he has this sort of lust for adventure, and he goes to Antarctica not really knowing what he's going to find. And probably the funniest stuff is when he shows up at the settlement in Antarctica, and he's all, I can't believe that there are, you know, people are living in comfort here, and we have ATMs, and they have a bowling alley, and it's all corporate, and it's very, you know, he has such a distaste for it, which is very amusing. And what he wants is this ridiculous harshness of, you know, when they go and they stand on the edge of the volcano, or they're out, you know, diving below the sub-freezing temperature water and things like that that he's looking for. And that stuff is really interesting, but his sort of fatalistic attitude, I think, about humanity, where he's saying, look at the wonder of nature, and at the same time, look at how the wonder of nature will crush us, I think is what makes him entertaining here.
Well, the thing with Werner Herzog is, you know, he is a combination of the, you know, the hard, you know, German, you know.
Right.
But he's also a compassionate artist, and it's always right. like he's at war with himself over which one of these two he should be.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, like, you know, he does find interesting characters. I think it is interesting to hear about these people who ended up in Antarctica for, you know, however long. Like, who goes to Antarctica to, you know, you get a welder.
Right.
You get guys who are going into freezing cold water just to study, you know, microorganisms and everything. And I saw just the other day, you know, a news story where they found, like, you know, a new form of life that dates back 14 million years from Antarctica. And it's, you know, they really – all these people were incredibly dedicated to their cause, you know, science and creating some type of community down there. And I respected that. And I feel like there was a nice mix of everything Herzogian, you know, in there, where it's you meet these crazy characters, you hear his totally, you know, singular voiceover
right,
that no
right.
one else would have. And the photography, as you said.
Yeah, is amazing. And you do have to wonder, I think, at certain points, whether he entirely respects all these characters, because you have – at least a couple points where he points the camera at someone and he says, tell me how you came to Antarctica. Tell me your story. The person starts talking. And then after, you know, a minute or two, in comes the Herzog voiceover. This story went on forever.
Yeah.
You know, which is funny. But at the same time, you wonder about his motivations here. You know, is he mocking these people? Does he respect them? It's sort of hard to tell. And that's what makes it entertaining. But at the same time, makes it a little hard to just, you know, admire the wonder of what's going on.
Well, one of the things I like is he asks questions that, like, they just come out of nowhere. Only Werner Herzog would ask them. You know, he was interviewing a scientist that's been studying penguins pretty much alone for the last 20 years. And, you know, the intro is, this man has turned taciturn, but I figured I would engage him in a conversation anyway, you know? And it was like, so he starts talking and the scientist is, you know, just giving answers about what society, penguin society is like. Sure. And then he's like, I had to keep the conversation going. So I asked the only question I could think was the next logical one. Is there gay penguins? You know, and it's like, but he asked it in such a way.
Right.
And I actually thought some of that stuff was interesting on the penguins, not just with the scientists, but where they show that there are penguins who go mad.
Right. They wander off and they go in the wrong direction. And no matter what you do to try and bring them back, they will determinedly continue going off away from the colony. And yeah, there is a lot of interesting stuff in this movie. I think it is kind of meandering. It's basically, you know, because he goes there and he doesn't have an agenda and he doesn't know what he's going to come up with. He just kind of goes like, I found this interesting. And then I found this interesting. And after a while, you long for something maybe a little more, like, again, like Grizzly Man, where you really have a focus on one thing and one story that's so compelling. Whereas here, it's kind of, It's kind of all over the place. And I liked it, but I felt like it could have used a little more focus.
Well, I would say two things about that. First of all, I have no idea what just happened to your German accent. It just went, I don't know where it went.
I have no German accent. Yeah. I, unlike yourself, am not a performer. So,
but you, it was pretty solid for a while, and then you just went off, you know. But I would say
just get caught up in the moment, you know. I can't focus.
It was good. It was good enough, but, yeah, you know, I'd like a little more consistency is
okay.
All I'm saying.
I'll work on it.
But I did think, you know, I respected, in certain, I would agree with you if it was certain cases, like, you know, it would be like a travelogue and you don't know what you're going to get, but
right,
because it was Antarctica, I've never seen anything pretty much about it at all. Like,
sure,
that was cool, whether it was just a truck driver driving a one-of-a-kind truck down there,
yeah,
or, you know, some of the scientists who they spoke to, you know, who were studying all types of just really interesting things, or, as you said, the guys who went on top and, you know, of the volcano and everything,
right.
And it was,
yeah,
just, it was, I like the movie. I like Werner Herzog. So, I mean, I probably have, you know, a little more of a base to enjoy something like that than, you know, people who aren't necessarily familiar. You know, he's
right,
a filmmaker that I like. So,
yeah,
I give him,
yeah,
a little more leeway.
And if you're,
I'd
looking
say,
for something really straightforward and conventional, you probably won't get that. You have to understand that Herzog is always following his own muse. But I liked it, too. I liked it about as much as I liked Pineapple Express, I would say. And I would give it 3 stars out of 5. I don't know if you want to give it some pineapples.
No, no pineapples. I would say out of 17 mad penguins,
yeah,
that have wandered off in their own direction, I will give it 14 and a half mad,
ooh,
penguins.
That's a high rating.
Well, I think, you know, the other thing is with that, you know, maybe if this was the winter and you're getting all types of interesting films, like,
right, it is definitely a good alternative.
Right. You would,
yeah,
maybe get, it'd be a little more lost in the shuffle. But as the summer, where it's just big movie, popcorn movie, popcorn movie, which is fine. That's what summer is. It's always,
sure,
nice to find, like, these kind of little gems. And
right,
I really did enjoy it.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so, no, I agree. It is definitely a good alternative if people are tired of the same summer blockbuster stuff. So also opening this week are a couple other movies, one of which neither of us have seen, The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 2. And I think probably if you saw The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants 1 and you had all your, you know, unanswered questions, then this will really wrap things up.
I really think it's one of those things where even if I'm interested, I'd have to go back and watch
it. Of course.
I don't want to get
lost. Yeah,
I don't want to get lost.
No one does.
Yeah.
And another movie that I saw that you didn't see called Hellride, which was an incredibly bad Quentin Tarantino knockoff written and directed and starring this guy named Larry Bishop, who is a sort of journeyman B-movie actor who I guess was in Kill Bill, although I didn't remember him from Kill Bill. And it's just this interminably boring biker movie with a plot that makes no sense. And it's just a bunch of empty, I would say empty style, but at the same time, the style doesn't even work. It's not like it's cool and flashy. It just attempts to be very clever, and it's not. And I will say it's a shame that you didn't come to the screening with me, because I know you would have appreciated the copious nudity in this film. But
who doesn't appreciate that? You know,
I honestly, at first I was like, all right, here's some topless, you know, strippers. But even the topless strippers, he just kind of goes to the well so many times that it just got tiresome after
a while. Well, it sounds disappointing because, you know, we mentioned Pineapple Express, which you can consider a genre pick, you know.
Right.
And it sounds like, you know, what was the last good biker genre pick, you know?
There hasn't been.
Wild Hogs?
I don't know if we want to plug Wild Hogs, but definitely this is, it would be nice if this was cool, and I think it looks like it's sort of fun trash, but it's really just tedious trash. So I kind of hated this movie, and I give it 1.5 stars out of 5 stars.
All right. I would like someone, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of Grindhouse, which I really wanted to be. So it would be nice if we see like a good kind of Grindhouse pick.
Absolutely. And that's what this movie is trying to do. And I guess I'm probably like Grindhouse more than you did. And this definitely did not live. It's nowhere near as good. It's like Death Proof, the Tarantino contribution to Grindhouse, is really, I think, what he's trying to copy here. And it shows you how good Tarantino is, even if you don't always like everything he does, but how good he is at taking all this stuff that people remember fondly but is really kind of crappy and making it into something that, you know, elevating it beyond that.
Yeah, he's got a good sense of history and his own spin on it all the time.
Right. So, okay, moving on to movies coming out on DVD this coming Tuesday. And here's some more movies that you haven't seen.
No.
I'll just briefly go through. Probably the biggest release coming out this Tuesday is Smart People, starring Dennis Quaid and Sarah Jessica Parker and Ellen Page, better known as Juno, and you know, which is what people call her, I'm sure, in everyday life.
Can I ask one question?
Please.
What was the last good movie Sarah Jessica Parker was in?
Yeah, it's definitely been a long time. And I will say that I can't stand Sarah Jessica Parker. I find her incredibly irritating. And probably the only redeeming quality of this movie is that she was mildly tolerable in this movie, which is about a bunch of insufferable, self-centered idiots who are you know, smart in that they are intellectual. Dennis Quaid plays a college professor. And Ellen Page is his daughter, who is very, you know, motivated to take the SAT and all this stuff. And, you know, they have to learn that it's not just about the intellectualism, that they have to get in touch with their emotions. And it's a lot of really contrived bull, unfortunately.
Sounds like a completely awful version of the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, thing. And I, you know, as you know, I'm not a big Wes Anderson fan. But, yeah, it's sort of removed of all that style that a movie like that would have. And it's just sort of straightforward and bland.
L.A. Story, that was her last good movie.
Wow, that's a good... I like that movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, that is
yes,
a good movie. And that was, what, like 17 years ago?
I had a crush
like
on her
that.
When that one came out. That was a good movie.
I never really found her attractive, but I did it. She's like Star with an asterisk in that movie, right? Yeah. Isn't that her character's name?
I don't remember if that
she
was
makes,
her name. It was
she
something
makes Steve
like
Martin
that.
Get a colonic?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And she was, you know, a total hippy-dippy valley girl.
Right,
but
right.
It's a great, you know, Steve Martin put out quality.
When was
quality
the last?
Film.
Yeah, Steve Martin's done a lot of crap since then as well.
Well, he's done some good movies.
He's done some good movies. Yeah.
Bowfinger.
So, Bowfinger is good. That's true. That's true. But don't bother with Smart People. One that I would give a recommendation to, at least a mild recommendation, is called How the Garcia Girls Spent Their Summer, which is a nice little indie drama with America Ferrera and Elizabeth Peña, who I think is a really underrated actress, and it's a little slow and it's a little long, but it's a nice look at sort of three generations of Latina women in a small town in Arizona and just how they spent their summer, as the title implies, you know, just dealing with relationships and small little things. It's actually kind of affecting, even though it's a little too stretched out, but that's one I think that not a lot of people saw. It was at Sundance like 3 years ago and finally came out in theaters. And
were there any traveling pants in that film?
No, that's true. I forget. That's true. America Ferrera is in the traveling pants movie as well. And I'm willing to bet that this is better than the traveling pants movie. Those aside, I think the most important movie coming out on DVD this coming Tuesday is a movie that neither of us have seen yet that begs to be discussed, which is Ninja Cheerleaders, starring Trishelle of the Real World.
I think this is a landmark film, and it is a disservice to whoever is listening that neither of us have seen this, but we would be more than willing to.
Absolutely.
Speaking of genre pictures.
Yes, and I do remember watching, sadly, I will admit, and you might have too, the Real World Las Vegas reunion season. I did, however, watch all six or whatever episodes, and during that season there was a rap or something party for the Ninja Cheerleaders where they all went to some nightclub and they showed some footage from Ninja Cheerleaders, which looked, you know, clearly awesome because Trishelle, of course, is quite the actress.
Well, the way I look at it is anytime you can put two words together that equal one giant non sequitur, yes. You should definitely make that into a movie.
Absolutely. And I learned on the internet that this movie also stars George Takei of Sulu of Star Trek fame. So I give Ninja Cheerleaders 5 stars.
I'm looking forward to her next film, Samurai Strippers.
You know, that will totally be a movie.
I would go watch that as well.
Yes. And then lastly on DVD, season 5 of the final season of the HBO TV show The Wire, which I know you are a huge fan of.
It's really strange. I didn't know we were going to talk about this today, but I was actually thinking about The Wire this morning. It was one of my favorite shows of all time. It is one of my favorite shows of all time, but I feel season 5 was not up to the level of excellence that seasons 1 through 4 were. Season 5 is good. It was an adequate season. I would still rate it, you know, like it's an above average television show. But I mean, if you haven't seen The Wire, I would say strongly seasons 1 through 4 might be the best television I've ever watched. And I'm not alone. Apparently every critic
in the world. Everyone feels the same. And I'm sort of going through this on DVD right now, and I've seen the first 3 seasons. And I actually have the first disc of the 4th season sitting at home from Netflix. And I agree that this is a really excellent show. I think the critical, you know, the people falling over all over themselves to declare it the greatest thing of all time is maybe a little exaggerated. And it inflates expectations for people who haven't seen it. And I think it's really good. But, you know, people might come into it thinking like, when are they going to prove to me that this is the greatest thing ever? But it is a really well-plotted, interesting, intricate, you know, well-acted show. And I'll definitely obviously watch all 5 seasons.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
No, go ahead.
Please. Well, the thing with season 5 is I think they get lost in 2 places, and I'm not going to ruin anything, but they do something that's like so plot heavy that it kind of drives everything around it, which they really hadn't done before. Everything was just kind of intersecting. Obviously, it was strong plots, but it was all kind of copacetic.
You know, it builds organically and slowly, I think, is one of the strengths of the show.
Yeah, and I feel like this time they went out and they used such a device that it just was like, it's okay, but it didn't really, you know, I guess you could say it made sense for the characters who drove it to that point, but in a way, it also didn't make sense because you wouldn't have seen something like that based on what you know about these characters. So that was one of the issues I had with season 5, and I just I would say the one other thing is they had the newspaper, you know, kind of, or the media as like a their subplot. Every year it's always about drug dealers, cops, and then, you know, it's politics, it's the school system. There's always one type of sub thing. And that was fine, but, you know, after going through the city hall in season 3 and then the school system in season 4, or did I reverse those two?
No, you got it right. Yeah, because I've seen the city hall season, but I haven't seen the school yet.
The school is the best one. Season 4 to me is the best season, but it was just, you know, those are really, really interesting, great, great, you know, subplots that really tie in with what's going on with the cops. And, you know, I know that they tried to do that with the newspaper, but it's all right. It's all right. It's all good. It was all worth watching. But I never came away from one episode this year saying, wow, this is, you know, amazing television. I was like, this is good television. But that's kind of where it ended for me this time
around. Right, right. Well, that's fair. And again, I mean, I'm sure I'll end up watching it. And I echo your endorsement of the show as a whole. I think it's absolutely probably one of the best shows that I've seen. I hesitate to call it the best show I've ever seen or the best show ever, but it's definitely very good. And I think, you know, people who are wary of cop dramas too, you know, if you're like, how many episodes of Law and Order or CSI could I sit through where it's just a procedural? It's a very different thing, and it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, one of the things they do is, just wanted to say quickly, is they really get you insight, and all of the characters are so full. So, you know, a drug dealer isn't a bad guy because he's a drug dealer. You get to understand them as characters on emotional levels. And seasons 1 through 4 were, you know, some of my favorite television ever.
No, I agree. It's a good show. So, So in conclusion, Rent Ninja Cheerleaders.
That's top 10, more than anything else. Maybe a double feature with that and Encounters at the End of the World.
That would be quite the double feature. I think Werner Herzog would approve of people watching both of those movies together.
I think he might shoot a documentary about ninjas and cheerleaders separately.
That, I would totally watch that.
I would watch it as well.
So, all right. Well, thank you for appearing on the strange and wonderful first edition of the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast.
I had a good time. I did not hate this, so I hope I took away some of your hatred as well.
Oh, thank you.
Awkward ending.
Yeah. Tune in next week for another edition.
Josh Bell hates everything!